content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, my name is Maureen McDonald from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the March 2019 Walter Magazine. A pair of handy homeowners combine elbow grease, attention to detail, and architectural detective work to restore a long-neglected house to its Victorian glory in Preserving History by Ayn Monique Clar. When I was a teenager, I told my grandma, "This was my dream house," recounts Heather Scott. And she said, "Darling, you can't live there. That's the liquor-running neighborhood." And so it was at the time, a once grand house that fell into hard times with a history that mirrors the development, fall, and revitalization of downtown Raleigh. If you've ever strolled through historic Oakwood, you'll know the Heck Pool Parker House. Perched on a hill with a stop-in-your-tracks mansard roofline, the Robin's Egg Blue Home is a landmark in the neighborhood. Designed by architect George H.S. Applegate, this classic Second Empire home was built around 1875 by Jonathan McKee Heck, a lawyer and Civil War colonel turned real estate developer. He sold it to Stephen Decatur Poole, another former colonel who was working as the state superintendent of public instruction. According to local historian Matthew Brown, Poole and his wife were unable to keep up with payments on the house. It was foreclosed upon, and the Hecks rented it until their daughter and family moved in, to whom they sold the house at the price of, quote, "natural love and affection plus $1," end quote. It later passed on to the Jones family, then the Parker family, by 1910, who owned the house until 1961, making key additions like building the retaining wall out front, extending the front porch, and constructing a carriage house and two-story addition. By the 1950s, they were renting rooms on the top floor to World War II veterans. As the neighborhood declined through the 1960s, the home changed ownership and served as a rooming house. In 1972, Annie Brantley Gardner, later Barber, who owned several properties in the area, bought and repaired the house, turning it into 7 efficiency apartments, each with its own bathroom and kitchenette. In 1974, the home narrowly avoided being demolished to make room for an on-ramp for the highway when the Society for the Preservation of Oakwood was formed to protect the historic neighborhood. By 1990, Barber and her husband moved into the apartment at the rear of the house, leaving the main part of the house unoccupied for the next 2 decades. And there it sat until Barber passed away and Scott's husband, Randy, a firefighter, switched jobs. He found himself driving down E Street to the new fire station, and one day a "for sale by owner" sign popped up on the lawn. He called his wife, and she headed out there that night. "I could hear the car keys jingling when I told her it was for sale," he laughs. But the house was out of their budget, especially considering the many renovations it would take to turn an apartment building into a family home. We spent months dreaming up plans and revising our budgets on paper napkins at the Raleigh Times, says Randy Scott. After more than a year, and the threat of a developer buying the property to knock down the home for new construction, the price came down enough for them to take the plunge. "After we bought it, I'd walk through the house and think, where do I even start?" says Randy Scott. There was the sheer size of it, and everything needed repair. There wasn't a single thing that didn't need to be done. The floors sloped, the wiring was shot, and the house had been chopped up and added on to. 7 kitchenettes and 7 bathrooms would have to be pulled out. The couple started work with the North Carolina State Historic Preservation Office to piece together the period floor plan. The team from the Preservation Office would literally crawl under the house to look at the age of the brick to figure out what was original and what wasn't, Scott says. The Scots stripped away the more recent additions, linoleum floors, fake mantels, and dropped ceiling among them, then started the painstaking task of putting the home back to its original form. They reached out to former owners to find photos and floor plans from decades before, even doing a walkthrough with the aging Parker sisters, who shared their memories from growing up in the home in the early 20th century. They lucked out when they learned that the NC State School of Design had done a takeoff of a neighboring home, one that's a mirror image of their own, in the 1960s, that helped them replicate the window details, trim, and framing around the front facade to its original splendor. As the Scots started adding details back in, they reached out to experts and artisans to get everything back in period detail. To build the apartments, they had just bashed through the walls, bashed through the windows, cut the trim wherever they needed to, so the biggest challenge was patching the place back together, says Randy Scott. They got permission from the Preservation Office to remove the plaster from the walls, 63 tons of it, which allowed them to completely redo the electrical, address rot, and reframe the structure. They salvaged the heart pine from the demolition to patch floors and complete a new addition. They called me the wood hoarder, he says. I'd go out to the barn on the weekends and pull out nails for hours. I filled 5 buckets. All in all, they kept much of the original floor plan, adding a few bathrooms, closets, and an up-to-date kitchen. While keeping the details period appropriate, the couple made sure to add visual markers to each of the new additions, like different trim board, so that future owners could trace back the history of the home. They also balanced the decor between Victorian grandeur and softer, modern touches. We didn't want it to feel like a museum or a time capsule. It had to be a cozy space we could come home to with our children. As the Scots put the final touches on the renovation, they felt both a sense of accomplishment and a new sense of place within the home's history. We knew we were doing important work, says Heather Scott. This hadn't been a single-family home since the 1940s, but it still had that sense of warmth to it. It was our responsibility to give this home another century of life. Jesse Ammons Rumbly gives us Ode to the Outdoors. Saturated and surreal, Autumn Coblen's brush gives Raleigh Greenways a painterly touch. I just like painting. That's what it comes down to, says Autumn Coblen, perched in her light-filled studio at Art Space in downtown Raleigh on a recent Saturday morning. She's surrounded by her vivid renderings of scenes along the Capital Area Greenway system, the Scarlet Bridge at Kiwanis Park, sepia trees near Lassiter Mills Park, a saffron sky behind Thomas Sayers' gyre inside the park at the North Carolina Museum of Art. There are other works, of course, but this series is Coblen's signature work and the way she honors her hometown, too. What I do is celebrate the greenways. I think they're beautiful. The Greenway series has also become the way she gives back. Coblen began making these about 10 years ago, and from the beginning started donating 20% of those sales to the City of Raleigh Parks and Recreation Greenway System and Triangle Greenways Council. At this point, I've donated over $12,000, she says. It feels good, and what fun! I love what I'm doing. By way of her art, Coblen has become a friendly and fervent Greenway advocate. When visitors enter her studio, Koblenoffen asks if they're familiar with the Greenway system. When the answer is no, Koblen lights up. We're really fortunate to have over 120 miles of Greenway just in Raleigh, she tells them. This encounter is well practiced, but the enthusiasm is genuine. And now we've connected with trail systems in neighboring cities, too. When the answer is yes, Koblen lights up just the same. That's the chance to pull out a large framed map of the Greenway trails to compare notes, since even those familiar with the Greenway often don't realize how vast it is. Whether they're familiar with the Greenways or not, people tend to be blown away, Koblen says. That is a lot of park that's ours to explore. Much of Koblen's other work is related to the outdoors as well. She paints florals, landscapes, still lifes, and the pet posters she first hung her hat on, too. She has several Raleigh murals under her belt, including one at Cameron Village Public Library. Her latest project is another mural in the Wendell Falls development, 15 miles east of Raleigh. A bold tessellation of bike icons painted on the sign of a shopping center building with actual bikes affixed to the wall. And she'll keep painting Raleigh's greenways as the trails continue to expand and connect. The best compliment I've ever gotten was from a student at NC State, Koblen says. She bought a small print for her dorm. When she bought it, she said, "This is going to help me remember how happy I am outside." That's it. We're all happier when we're outside. It changes everyone's mood. When you run into people on the Greenway, they're out there exploring it. They're happy. You can learn more about her paintings at autumncoblenpaintings.com. This article was edited for Time. From the Giver section, we have Measurable Impact. Raleigh Rescue Mission's new CEO fits right in, by Catherine Curran. John Luquette knows the power of an advocate. The new CEO of Raleigh Rescue Mission, RRM, grew up in extreme poverty in rural Mississippi, but a local family took a chance on him. They helped him learn to read and used their resources to help Luquette's father find a job. He's channeled the gratitude from that experience to inform his life's work, and his new role at RRM will surely keep him on that path. What we're doing is more complicated than giving someone a meal and a place to stay. At the mission, we go deep with these individuals to help get them back into mainstream society. Most recently, CEO of the Good Samaritan Health Center in Atlanta, Georgia, Luquette says he was drawn to the sense of community in Raleigh. It seems like there are people, organizations, and businesses in the Raleigh and Triangle areas who are actively seeking out how to help others, Luquette says. There's a desire to partner and work together to address community issues. He says RRM enticed him because it creates a measurable difference for the people it serves. I thought to myself, what kind of organization do I want to be a part of that will really make an impact? Where, as a result of what you're doing, are the individuals that have been changed? He found that in Raleigh Rescue Mission, an organization that drills down to the root of what comes to homelessness in Wake County. What causes homelessness in Wake County could be totally different than other regions. That's why it's important that the organization is tackling everything on a local level, from financial literacy to vocational training to the school-to-prison pipeline. One way they do this is through RRM's New Life Plan, which Luquette says is currently his main focus. From September to November of last year, nearly 400 individuals requested services. Many of those are referred to other organizations in the area, but 159 were enrolled in the program, a six-phase plan whose goal is to take an individual from homelessness and unemployment to becoming a working member of society with a place to live. To best help the participants, the organization partners with other nonprofits like Habitat for Humanity, Wheels for Hope, Wake Tech Community College, and the Green Chair Project to offer full coverage and support to those they are serving. The phases of support cover just about every need. The plan addresses trauma, mental and physical health, tutoring for both children and adults, sustainable living wage jobs, transportation, and eventually permanent housing, says Luquette. The children that come in contact with RRM are also a huge priority. Yes, we want to invest in adults, but we can't forget that we've got to invest in these children. Children that enter the New Life Plan with their parents will receive everything from tutoring to access to extracurricular activities. With two adult children of his own, Luquette says, "When I'm serving someone, I always think about what I would do if they were my children." Luquette broke the cycle of poverty in his own family and hopes to help others do the same. With Raleigh, a growing city versus an established hub like Atlanta, Luquette says the scale of the problem is small enough that his work with Raleigh Rescue Mission can have, in his words, a measurable impact. Next up is Local Catch. Earp Seafood Keeps It in the Family by Catherine Curran. "The only thing that has changed is the generation," says Kimber Salmon Stewart, granddaughter of Earp Seafood founder Herbert Earp. Her grandfather started the fish market 52 years ago on the corner of South Saunders and Maywood Avenue. Even if you haven't been inside, you've seen it. A white building hooded by a blue roof. Earp Seafood, written in bold, no-nonsense letters, that has become a landmark as you approach downtown. The structure has origins in the 1960s, before Saunders Street became a major thoroughfare. "My mother worked at a hair salon in a house in historic Oakwood, and she gave my grandfather $500 to start the shop," says Stewart. She says her grandmother, Mary Earp, was the backbone of the business, even making homemade preserves for the regulars in the shop. It was the love and hard work that she put in that made it so successful. Her parents, Nancy Earp Salmon and David Salmon, yes, she just happened to marry a man named after a fish, eventually took over the business. "Having the Earp name out there and carrying that on makes me feel proud. As a granddaughter, I feel like I've made my family proud," says Stewart. Now, her husband Dan has been managing the market for 8 years, and the shop has only closed long-term once, when a tornado hit in 2011. The market was rebuilt, and the family continues. In 2017, the building's exterior got a facelift, a bold seascape mural by Sean Koenig that greets you as you approach it from the south as part of Raleigh's public arts campaign. Inside, the space is clean, chilly, and lined with dozens of stainless steel bins filled with the latest coastal haul. "Everything we sell is wild, caught, and fresh. Our motto is, we hook it and you cook it. The store boasts only the freshest fish and shellfish from the East Coast. Crabs from Maryland, snapper from South Carolina, oysters from North Carolina." Stewart says that oysters are an especially big hit right now. Millennials love an oyster roast. "And we always say, eat fish, live longer. Eat oysters, love longer," Stewart says coyly. Stewart says business is thriving, and she loves seeing loyal customers coming back year after year, especially when customers who used to be kids start bringing their own children in for a visit. It puts a smile on everyone's face. And the plan is to keep it in the family. Next in line is Dan and Kimber Stewart's 16-year-old son, Presley. We've tried our best to keep it going as a family business, and he'll be the fourth generation. It's a beautiful thing to have. In the Happening Now section, Southern Surreal, a never-before-seen exhibit of mysterious artwork. Trompe l'oeil carvings, secret compartments, and a house shaped like a tramp ship 200 miles from the sea? All the creations of Tilden J. Stone, a little-known master cabinet maker and woodcarver who was born in North Carolina in 1874. NC State's Gregg Museum of Art and Design director Roger Manley first came across his work while researching a book on North Carolina curiosities, when he met a couple who lived inside a shoe. The shoe is actually made of a small-scale building, but they pointed to an overgrown foundation a couple hundred feet away, where they said an eccentric uncle had lived in a house shaped like a ship, says Manley. So he dug deeper, learning Stone's story. Born in Thomasville, Stone was orphaned at a young age, then ran away to New York as a teen, where he apprenticed for a cabinet maker. Stone later joined the Merchant Marines, spending the next 30 years sailing around the world and learning different styles of woodworking in ports like Singapore and Macau. After retiring as a senior officer, he moved back to North Carolina, where he worked as a designer and pattern maker for local furniture brands like Bernhardt and Broyhill. But he spent his free time carving personal, quirky furniture in the cargo hold of the shore-based ship. He made strange furniture with lots of extremely odd features carved into it, often as portrait pieces, Manley says. The first time Tilden's work has been displayed in North Carolina, Southern Surreal, Masterpiece Furniture by Tilden Stone, gathers his diverse, fantastic work. A set of shelves composed of fishing rods and creels. It looks like you could just pick them up and go fishing, says Manley. An object that appears to be a wood stove that turns into a chest of drawers through a series of knobs and levers. A set of wooden golf clubs with hidden liquor storage inside. Hey, it was Prohibition. And a Hoosier-style cabinet, complete with bins for flour and cornmeal, that unfolds into a working piano at the twist of a screw. We wanted to show something that wasn't quite so contemporary, and I think people will love the playfulness and mystery in his work, says Manley. The exhibition is at the Gregg Museum of Art and Design at 1903 Hillsborough Street, free admission, and you can visit gregg.arts.ncsu.edu for more information. Also in Happening Now, Art in Bloom, NCMA's fifth year of florals. The North Carolina Museum of Art will kick off spring with a burst of blooms. The Art in Bloom showcase runs March 21st to 24th, including special events like the Frida's Floral Fiesta kickoff party, inspired by the Frida Kahlo exhibition coming later this year, extended hours at in-house restaurant Iris, and a variety of workshops from floral arranging to floral crown construction to macrame. The weekend's guest speaker will be Floral Mama Holly Chapel, owner of Hope Flower Farm in Waterford, Virginia, who will speak about the farm-cum-workshop space, where she hosts retreats, editorial shoots, and other special events. Nearly all of the 50 floral designers featured in the exhibit are North Carolinians, and each will be assigned to interpret a work of art in the permanent gallery. For its 5th anniversary, the popular springtime celebration won't be changing much from previous years. It's sincerely about the art. We have a new director, and we really want to celebrate that, says Coordinator of Programs Laura Finnan. She says this year's curation of Art in Bloom will showcase work that is on loan or that hasn't been selected in years past. We really want visitors to spend time seeing things that they haven't noticed before. There will be 53 creations, including unique vessels blossoming with fresh flowers. Most displays are inspired by the art, but the entrance to the West Building will be filled with larger-than-life platforms from selected floral designers that pull from their own imaginations. These are some of my favorites, says Finnan. They can be up to 9 or 10 feet tall and really stretch creativity. Outside of the museum's West Building, you'll find a sculpture will get some attention this year. Lush, by local metalsmith Sarah Techter, a display of 137 wire clusters, wire flowers clustered in a crescent around the Ellsworth Kelly sculpture. Techter is a teaching artist at the museum, and Finnan says that her idea was a perfect fit for Art in Bloom. Techter, who may be better known for her wearable art, is sponsored by the Matrons of the Arts program. She says that nature is an element that has consistently informed her creations. The leaf or the flower is something I've always worked with in one way or the other. Pop by to see Techter planting her blooms March 19th through 21st. And lastly, wander around the outside of the State Farmers Market, and you're likely to encounter Neil Thomas. A fixture for decades, he's known for his dry firewood, which he cuts in the forest near his home in Wendell, North Carolina. I cut the trees, I split my own wood, and I come to market, he says. But Thomas does more than chop logs to warm local hearths. His true skill lies in finessing a sharp blade to strip lengths of wood that he weaves into sturdy classic baskets. That's what I've been doing for 45 years, says Thomas. I craft handmade baskets out of white oak. A trade Thomas learned in his 20s, you can also find his baskets at the NC State Fair's Village of Yesteryear. We've run out of time for today's episode of Walter Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Maureen McDonald for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.